The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. All right, welcome to the BS Report, our third of the week. And we did not intend for this to become its own podcast. When I taped the Week 15 lines with Cousin Sal on Tuesday, I decided I'd call my buddy Mark Stein, who covers the NBA for ESPN.com, that I would call him to make fun of the Devin Harris-Jason Kidd trade, just sneak attack him. And he happened to be at a car dealership on his cell phone. I thought it was going to be like 2 minutes, and it ended up going 45. So we decided to hold that and make it its own podcast. So when you listen to this, just remember that we taped this on Tuesday, late morning, West Coast time. First of all, now I have you in a public forum. I'd like you to admit once and for all that I was right about the Devin Harris-Jason Kidd trade.
You are so premature. That's why you're trying to pin me down, because you know that, you know, Devin's had a good 5-6 weeks, so you're trying to get me to concede defeat, but I will not.
A good 5-6 weeks? He's fourth in the league in scoring.
You know what? My hat's off to him. He's undoubtedly exceeded all expectations, but they're playing a system where he is the number one option, that dribble drive offense, half court, and the whole thing is Devin Harris, go to the basket. So that's why, that's one reason why his numbers look so good. He would have never, ever, ever put up those kind of numbers in Dallas.
Because it was illegal for Dallas to run the same system with him? I didn't realize they had passed that rule.
Well, if you had Dirk Nowitzki, you would tell him to stand in the corner and be the second option?
Yes, and he could shoot wide open threes, which he makes like 45% of. Yes.
Well, no.
And in fact, in the finals, if you watch those games carefully, a lot of their success in games 1 and 2 and in game 3 before things fell apart was Devin Harris just beating guys off the dribble. And he killed Tony Parker. They never should have traded him. He had a great contract. I don't see how you can defend this. Just admit it. Just say, you know what? This didn't work.
It's way too premature to say it didn't work.
Okay. Why is it way too premature? Jason Kidd's going to leave after the season.
They wouldn't have even made the playoffs last year if Kidd wasn't here to rejuvenate your favorite player, Dirk Nowitzki, for Nowitzki to carry them in and save them as a – or were they the seventh seed?
Wait, how did he rejuvenate them? His stats are the same they've been every other year. What am I missing?
Because that team was mentally broken and just – Kidd obviously struggled when he got here, but the one thing he did do – he gave Nowitzki hope, and Dirk played as well probably down the last 6-8 weeks of the season, coming back from an injury that most guys miss a month with. He was back in a week, and go back and look at how well he played at the end of the season.
Okay, so here are my choices with my mentally broken team. One, I could trade my young point guard who's in high demand, who has a great contract, and pay an extra $11 million and give up 2 first-round picks to turn him into a point guard who hasn't been really at an elite level for about 3 years, or I could just fire my coach. And I fired my coach 4 months later anyway. So you're telling me that sequence was correct.
That part I will agree with you. That's one misconception about this trade. Everybody thinks this trade was to, you know, Kidd was the last piece of a championship puzzle. The Mavs, that's not an accurate portrayal of why they did this. As much of a reason was Devin Harris was not going to be this Devin Harris under Avery Johnson. So they brought Kidd in thinking that Kidd would be able to give the team new life, much like we see with Detroit now. They thought Kidd was going to breathe new life into this thing from a team that was beaten down and gone stale. But you're right. If the Mavs were going to fire their coach anyway, you know, that's probably the part that they have to second guess. Why didn't they consider doing that? But I still think there were a lot of reasons to go for Kidd anyway.
Probably. They had one of the biggest final collapses ever. The next year, they became, I think, the second number one seed ever to lose to an 8 seed in round 1 in one of the most devastating collapses slash beatdowns I think we've ever seen in the playoffs. Just a complete undressing. And then they brought Avery Johnson back again midway through the season. You could tell the team hated him. And yet they do the Devin Harris trade first.
They were looking for reasons to not fire him. Maybe Avery was in the second year, not even through 2 years of a big four-year contract. That was a big reason why they made the trade. They thought Kidd could spark enough of a turnaround that they could save the Avery thing, and that's where they miscalculated.
So for the same money that they could have paid Avery Johnson just to go away, they paid the New Jersey Nets to make this Jason Kidd-Devin Harris exchange and throw in two number ones.
Well, you know where I stand on the two number ones. Mark Cuban can buy back two number ones. Teams are selling those left and right. So the two number ones, easily replaceable. The $3 million that the Mavs threw into the deal, that's all on Cuban, and I think he can handle it. I mean, there's no question Devin Harris is playing better than he ever has. And that's the part people are going to look at. But I question, was that ever going to happen here in Dallas? Devin himself has said this season, what we're running is an untraditional NBA system, and I think even he knows, was a system like that going to be used in Dallas where he is the number one option? There's no way. There's no way that would have happened with Nowitzki here.
All right, I have two major problems. First of all, as I said, they should have fired Avery. Second of all, if you're going to trade Devin Harris, that's a guy who is a young player with a good contract that either you can trade him by himself or package him with other guys and maybe really get something. You know, and they didn't do either. They just got Jason Kidd's huge, ridiculous contract that is useless.
So you're telling me they can't use Kidd's expiring contract to retool too? If this thing doesn't work out, they can't completely rebuild the team.
Who is trading for Jason Kidd for $20 million a year in February? What you think, like Portland maybe?
Portland's been after Kidd since he was with the Nets.
So if they turn Portland into Rafe LaFrance, Steve Blake, Travis Outlaw, and a number one, you think that would be a decent salvage?
No, I don't think they will do that. I think they're going to. I think the way they look at it is give this thing a full year, see if they can upgrade the roster that they have right now, and then from there, if it doesn't work out, they're looking at the fact that Kidd's contract comes off the books as that's their chance to, you know. Whether they can do it in 09 or whether they have to wait till 2010, that's when they go for the more drastic makeover.
They're not going to be under the cap enough to do anything in 2009.
Yes, they will.
How? They got Dampier at like $12 million.
No, in 2010, the Mavs, that's why the Mavs didn't do the Zach Randolph deal, because they're going to be one of the teams with a lot of room in 2010.
And also because he's Zach Randolph. Well, I just don't see... I don't see how any of this was good. I just think you're glass half full on this. I think it's glass half empty.
Well, of course, because you've reached your conclusion and you've never been wrong. So,
well, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I think if you go into my February archives, I think I might have been the only writer with a national forum to criticize this trade, which earned me a ritual beating on the website that Mark Cuban pretends he doesn't own. What's that called? DallasBasketball.com. Well, those guys came after me for a month. Where are those guys now? Hey, guys at DallasBasketball.com, how about the update on my thoughts on the Jason Kidd trade?
Look, I do not want to diminish what Harris has done, because he has been incredible. He has worked on his jumper. He's shooting the ball better than he ever has. I mean, you look at it now, he either goes to the hoop, makes the jumper, or gets fouled. When he's in his zone like that, he's incredible. But again, I think you have to be somewhat realistic here and ask yourself, how many teams would give him the offensive freedom that he has now?
I will go the other direction.
A very small handful. And everybody talks about, you know, what a defensive force he was and how quick he was. Now, did he play great in the playoffs against the Spurs, against Parker? No question. But I remember, you know, a month before the trade, Chris Paul went for 30-something on him. I mean,
good. Hey, Chris Paul does that against everybody.
Exactly. So when he does it to Kidd, it's, you know, this huge controversy, and everyone says, Kidd's finished, he's too old. When he does it to Devin Harris, nobody says a word.
Well, the problem is that Chris Paul had to get in line to do that to Jason Kidd, along with the other 12-point guards who beat him off the dribble every time. I will go this far. Isaiah Thomas accepted, And maybe the Tracy McGrady, Orlando Houston trade accepted. And I'm not counting the Vince Carter trade because they had to get rid of him and they didn't have a choice, even though it was a terrible trade. I think this was the worst trade of the decade. I really do. I think this was the worst trade in the NBA this decade.
Nowitzki for Tractor Trailer, that's not on the list?
That was in 1999. Or 1998, whatever that draft was.
I thought you meant last 10 years. Fine. It's not this millennium.
Decade. I'm saying the millennium, this is the worst trade that Isaiah Thomas or Tracy McGrady was not involved in.
No way.
Even if you said Devin Harris for Jason Kidd straight up and Jason Kidd makes three times as much money, that's maybe one of the 10 worst trades ever. But now you're throwing in the additional $11 million. You're throwing in two number ones. Worst trade.
You totally underestimate, the intangibles that kid brings.
Oh.
Now the Mavs do not have the team right now where those things come into play. So, if you want to blame Kidd for that, fine, go ahead. I guess you have that
you
right.
I wish Bucher was here because you and Bucher keep pushing this whole thing that Kidd is like Gandhi in the locker room and all this stuff. If he was such like a fantastic locker room presence, why did Phoenix dump him? Why did the Dallas thing fall apart in 96?
So you're going to ignore the fact that the Nets were, Clippers East for 15 years and he put that team in the finals 2 years in a row?
Yeah, so then why did he basically get Byron Scott fired? I mean, we can all agree that his hands were all over that one, right?
All I know is you can say that it's me and Bucher pushing this agenda, but it's not. It's Kobe Bryant. It's LeBron James. Go to those guys. Get them on the Almighty podcast and then ask them about Kidd. I mean, they still hold this guy in unbelievably high esteem.
Yeah, why? Because he doesn't shoot. He lives to make them look better. He's like a girlfriend that is just there to service your every need. Of course, I would love playing with Jason Kidd too. He's going to take four shots in 40 minutes. Sign me up.
He's like a girlfriend there to service your every need.
Hey, this is a freewheeling podcast intended for mature audiences. Well, we're always going to agree to disagree on this.
Have we ever agreed on anything?
We agree on a couple of things. The other thing, we disagree on the Shaq trade too. I still think Sean Marion was the most overrated guy who was available last year. If you're looking at the Phoenix pre-D'Antoni, post-D'Antoni, I think we can all agree that a lot of those Phoenix guys were really wildly overrated, and now we're starting to figure that out, right? Dio, Barbosa, Rajah Bell, maybe even Amari. Definitely Marion.
Well, that's the thing. You start picking at Amari, and then he puts up a 22-20, and it just he does that all the time. He pulls out these games that just – make you stop and think, can you really move this guy? I mean, to see what he's capable of after all those knee surgeries. I mean, it's frightening, but is he ever going to do it on a consistent basis? I mean, no, I thought the Shaq trade was the right move at the time. I mean, they were not going to win anything. They were too small the way they were. The question is, did they make the right Marion trade? Was there another alternative there? And, based on everything I know, there really wasn't an alternative. If they didn't make that Shaq trade, they would have finished the season with Marion, and then you got to decide, do we keep him as an expiring contract, or do we, take on more salary? And let's face it, the Suns aren't in a mode where they take on salary. So they probably would still have Marion today, and then where are they?
Well, and also, they got rid of Banks' contract, which doesn't sound like a lot, but he's making $4 million a year until like 2039. So, they got rid of that, and now Shaq's an expiring contract next year. I don't know. I just think I look at what happened to Steve Kerr. We've talked about this. He took over that team. They had a four-year window. He took over in year four. The first trade he was asked to make was, we want you to trade Kurt Thomas and two of our number ones for nothing. To get under the tax. Now he's got this Marion Amari alpha dog issue. I don't, like, if I was the GM of that team, I don't know what I would have done. What would you have done? How do you fix that?
I do not think this is the job he signed up for. I mean, he's going to take all the heat and the Shaq trade, ultimately that's his, so he's the one who's going to have to live with that. But, these trades where they've lost four or five draft picks when it's so clear that what this team needs is an injection of youth, and you see, Fernandez and Rodriguez and all these guys, Rondo, all these guys they could have had. Just imagine how different the NBA is if they just keep Rondo.
Well, just
yourselves might not have a title, and I mean, imagine Nash and Rondo together now. So
no, we don't. We don't win the title without Rondo, and we don't win 72 games this year without Rondo, which we're going to do. But I think that the underrated thing, and I've written about this, but the 2007 draft, selling Rudy Fernandez to Portland for $3 million versus just keeping him and stashing him. He wouldn't have counted against your tax. In many ways, the perfect Phoenix pick, not costing them anything. You have him. You can trade him potentially. And to just sell that pick for $3 million is just such a dump on your fans. You know, it really is. And I don't know if Kerr hadn't taken over yet. I don't know if he was involved in that decision, but that coupled with the Rondo is indefensible. And if I'm a Phoenix Suns fan, I don't know how I support the team after that.
Why are you so down on kids getting back to that? Is it because they beat the Celtics in the 0-2 conference finals? What is it?
I just think he's at a different point in his career. If they had gotten the 2002 Jason Kidd, I would have loved that trade. It just was the classic panic trade to me. Just classic. Just things are falling apart. What do we do? Oh, it's Jason Kidd. And you know, he's just not that guy anymore. And I think we even saw it in the Olympics.
But I think, see, again, I think people paint that thing as the Mavs thought they were close to a championship and Kidd was the over-the-top piece. That's not it. I think a big part of it was rejuvenating Dirk, and it definitely did that. The mistake part was, they thought that Kidd coming in could offset all the, you know, where that team was mentally and all the problems they were having with Avery. And Kidd could not do that, and they ended up firing the coach anyway. So I'm with you on that part.
But you left out another part that they said was that we're going to get Kidd. We're going to run. We're going to get our guys running again. It's like you have Eric Dampier and you have Nowitzki, who's one of the slower, you know, power forwards in the league.
No, come on. You're not going to run with those guys. Nowitzki can run. They haven't had Josh Howard.
You run if he's your center. You're not running if you're playing him and Dampier at the same time.
They don't run because their defense hasn't been good enough, not because they don't have guys who can't run. Jason Terry can run. Howard can run. They brought in young guys like Gerald Green. They can run fine.
Who's filling the wing on that team other than Josh Howard?
What, Green can't run? He plays.
You're really going to play the Gerald Green card? I watched Gerald Green for 4 years. Come on. If he plays a meaningful playoff minute for you, I will send you a check for Best Buy.
What is me? The Mavs are not like the Celtics are for you. They are not my team.
It's an insult to Nash. Wait, we have to talk about one other thing about how right I was about the Philadelphia 76ers. And how I tried to warn you over and over again as you kept putting the Sixers in the top seven.
On that part, I might have, I'm not completely ready to concede, but I will admit that through 20-ish games, they are playing out exactly the way that you said they would. As much as I hate to admit that.
Oh, I love when you admit it. After watching Elton Brand for 5 years in person, I was reasonably sure he was not worth $83 million, much less $63 million.
I'm not going to pin this all on Brand. I mean, you know, you will, but
I'm not pinning it on Brand. I just don't. Their team makes no sense now. Who is their go-to guy?
Okay, there's no question. Last year they won because, you know, they pressed and they scrambled the game and they went small and they did all these things to, you know, offset the fact that they couldn't shoot. But to have a long-term future, even in the East, you're going to win that way? You're going to win a title that way? No, you need a low-post presence. You need some size. I mean, Elton Brand, you're telling me on that Clipper team that was, you know, one game away from the conference finals that Brand wasn't great that year?
Yeah,
He was fantastic.
It was 3 years ago. It was his career year. They signed him 3 years after his career year. My issue is this, and we argued about this as much as we've argued about anything other than the Kidd trade. When you can afford three max guys really in the NBA. If your three max guys are Elton Brand, Andre Iguodala, and Sam Dallenberg, where are you going? What's your ceiling?
I'm with you on that. I mean, Iguodala, $80 million. I mean, that should be raising a lot more eyebrows. And then the other thing is, you know, Dallenberg, who, you know, last year I would say at least did okay. I mean, he's just, from everything I've seen and from everything I've heard, I mean, he and Brand can't play together at all, which doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I could have told you that in August.
What I mean, Dallenberg's losing minutes now to Ratliff and Donyell Marshall. So,
right.
I mean, if you want to, you know, Elton Brand's been there for 20 games. You know, I don't know that I'd be looking at him with the blame stick.
I just think when you, you know, I hate to keep using poker analogies with the NBA, but you can reach these points where you're going all in. And when you're paying $83 million Elton Brand, you're going all in. Just like you're going in with Rashard Lewis for $120 or Emeka Okafor for $70. There's no going back once you give that money out and once that guy has taken 20% of your cap. And in the Elton Brand case, I think they did it to get the fans excited and because he was Elton Brand. But really, they were getting a guy who had his career year in 2006, who's coming off a major injury, who didn't fit in with what they did.
No. I mean, Dominique Wilkins could come back from an Achilles injury, but Elton Brand can't.
I'm not saying he couldn't come back. I'm just saying these were the facts. This guy had been on one playoff team in 9 years. It was coming off an injury where he'd played 6 games. In an entire season, and was like a borderline All-Pro. I think Buick was down on him forever. Even during Elton Brand's best 2006 season.
Where is Buick, by the way? Why am I here by myself? Where is Buick to counterbalance all your rhetoric?
Buick and Nancy Lieberman are going over the sideline reporter hand guide, handline guide. What is hand guide? What are those called? Rule guide? Rule book.
Handbooks?
Handbooks. Yeah, they're going over the sideline handbooks together. One last thing. My Celtics, you know, conceivably, if you look at the schedule, could be taking a 19-game winning streak into the Christmas Day game. You realize that, right?
Yeah, I can't wait for this game, honestly.
This is the best Christmas Day game. Everybody thinks, oh, yeah, Shaq Kobe the first time.
But I guess the other question is, how do you deal with five games on Christmas Day? I mean, are you watching all five?
No, but I'm watching that Celtic game and possibly even going to it. I just think this is one of the great, really great regular season games ever, potentially. You could have a Laker team that's like 24-3 against a Celtic team that, knock on wood, if they can take care of business these next 7 games, could be 19-game winning streak, 26-2.
Something else to look at. I think Boston plays Cleveland on January 9th in Cleveland. Will the Cavs be 18-0 at home for that game? Who are they going to lose to in the next month?
Well, we've never seen. I don't ever remember a season where we had three teams with a chance to win in the high 60s or higher than that. And we really could see it this year. You could see Cleveland, Lakers, and Boston all go 67-15 or higher, right? I mean, worst case scenario, barring injury, I don't see any of those teams dropping below 65.
No question. And then the question becomes, how do you make your MVP pick?
Well, yeah, and LeBron's stats have really suffered this year because he's not playing in the fourth quarters at all. And I think Kobe, you know, they've cut down his minutes. They had a really easy schedule, and now it's starting to even out. But, you know, he didn't play a lot of the fourth quarters either.
The Lakers had an easy schedule early?
First month they did.
What are you talking about? I can't believe you would say that.
Two back-to-backs in 5 weeks. That's an easy schedule. It's all about the back-to-backs. That's what Hollinger does, that schedule, whatever he does. He figures out who had the toughest schedule and somehow doesn't factor in back-to-backs or 5 games in 7 nights.
No, obviously you know I'm kidding. I spend every Monday arguing with Laker fans about this. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is I think people only look at winning percentages. You know, it's not just, it's being on the road. I mean, on the road, you know, going to Charlotte's tough. Not tough, but it's tougher if it's a road. I mean, any road game is tougher. So
perfect example. Well, 2 games the Celtics had that, you know, if you're just looking at stats and formulas, they don't seem like tough games. But they played Charlotte 2 Saturdays ago, the day after they had played on a Friday night. That Charlotte team, for whatever reason, really chirps it up with Boston. They always get fired up for the game. Like that, I looked at the schedule. I was like, wow, that's going to be a tough game. We might not win that. And then last Sunday against Indiana, they kill Indiana on a Wednesday night. They beat Portland, beat the crap out of them on national TV. And then they got this little sneaky Sunday, oh yeah, we'll just fly to Indiana, take care of business game. Those are tough games. Those are games that on the NBA schedule you take for granted and they bite you in the butt. And I don't see any formula that can account for that.
Yeah, no, I don't, you know, the Lakers were unbelievable in November and there's no way to diminish it. But I mean, I don't see how people can ignore the fact that when you only have, like you said, they had one back-to-back that was a game against the Clippers, so that doesn't really count. So they had two back-to-backs, you know, almost no travel. I mean, that was like how Boston started last year. I mean, travel is, you know, still, for as pampered as they are compared to how it was in the 80s, I mean, a road game is a road game, and it's still, you got to factor that in. I mean, and same thing, you know, Cleveland's just beat eight teams by 12 points or more. I think that's an NBA record, but you look at those 12 teams, you know, if the teams aren't any good, that does help you run up the score a little bit.
Yeah, and a lot of it has to do with looking at some of the games that are the tougher games and figuring out, you know, did you catch this team at a good time? Like the Lakers played the Clippers twice in like the first 7 days when that team, those guys had like barely met. Baron Davis was hurt. Marcus Camby was hurt. Like they, you wanted to catch the Clippers that first week. And at the same time, like, you know, they played Houston. McGrady's got the flu. He's terrible. He does nothing. So it really, you know, there's so many variables to it. I just don't see how you could have a schedule formula. I'm really against it.
Are your Clips that much further along now?
No. Well, I mean, say, I'll throw this at you. Mike Dunleavy, how bad does their record have to be for somebody to say, maybe we should change the coach? Like, do they have to go 5-62? Like,
somebody asked me that in the chat yesterday. And I mean, I think the only scenario is, I guess it's conceivable that if they keep losing the way they are, you know, do you let Kim Hughes go in as the coach? But, I mean, I struggle to see. I don't know. You're there every night, not me, but I'm...
And the Clippers, you know, they were the only team that had a money-back guarantee up to opening night, which, considering what happened to the economy, was one of maybe the worst five ideas of this decade. So they allowed ticket holders bail. Then you have the remaining ticket holders sitting there just actively despising Dunleavy, and just they can see what's going on. They see that this guy has no idea how to come up with a system for the talent he has, and just every night they come out and they lose, and that's it. And now they've had the biggest attendance drop of any team this season. I think they've lost, 16-17% of last year's that pace or something. They're 30th.
And the thing is like, if Camby's playing unbelievably well.
Yeah,
I'm not nearly as down on Zach as you are. They've got some pieces there.
I wasn't down on Zach. I was down on the fact that if you're going to trade for him, you also then have to move Chris Kaman the same day. That is a two-part deal, in my opinion. Now you have Kaman, Randolph, and Camby, and every other team in the league knows that one of those guys now needs to go. So you've...
Well, I think they will. I still think they will move Kaman. I mean, don't underestimate the fact now that the guy is legitimately hurt, and they're basically saying now he's got some, you know, there's something torn in that foot. So, you know, obviously, you know, his contract puts people off for starters. I mean, there are teams that probably would take that contract, Charlotte being one of them. But I mean, now that the guy's got an injury too, that's going to give people even more pause before they.
I disagree because
take Kaman on.
Yeah, but he's got a trade kicker that either his salary goes up 15% or you have to pay him $4 million right away. And in this economy and with what's happening to the league this year, I don't think people want to cut Chris Kaman a check for $4 million just to have them on his team. So wait, one last question before you go back to dealing with Cuban's car.
No, it's Nowitzki's. I'm getting his oil changed.
Nowitzki's car. I'm sorry. December 15th, I feel like, is going to be a big day because that is the day when you can trade a lot of these one-year guys, the 700,000 guys, the Matt Barn $1.2 million types, and everybody else that you've signed during the season. Do you think there's just going to be a free-for-all for trades, or are you feeling like maybe everybody is just so wary of doing anything, nothing will happen?
No, I think, you know, I'm sure you probably won't be surprised by this answer, but I'd say somewhere in between. We always hear that it's going to be an avalanche on December 15th, and we never get the avalanche. But I would say it does feel right now like half the league is on the trading block, and it seems like there is just a ton of chatter out there. And based on our math, on December 15th, 85 more guys become eligible to be traded. So that's,
wow.
You know, that's almost one-fourth of the league that you can now plug into trade. So there's no question it's going to ramp things up. But, you know, I wouldn't say that, like, we're going to see three trades on Monday. I wouldn't go that far. But, I definitely think it changes the equation.
And let me just elaborate for the casual NBA fans out there. So this year, because of the economy, teams are a lot less prone to take on an extra $1 million in a deal. So, and you know, if you use the trade machine on ESPN.com, which is fantastic, So say the Clippers trade Chris Kaman for Jason Richardson. So Kaman makes like 9.5 and Richardson makes 12.5. So they don't want to take on that additional money. So they want to also then throw in one of their guys to kind of even out the money a little bit. But and it's going back to December 15th, you have these 85 extra guys that can then be thrown into the trades, and that is just a way of evening out 1 million, 1.5, whatever, right?
Is basically, yeah. This is everybody who signed in the summer, December 15th is the first time you can trade them. That's probably the best lay explanation for it. So all these guys who signed in the summer, and you know, as we've seen, there's a lot less money available in the summer, so guys are signing shorter deals and they're signing tradable deals. So you've got these extra 85 guys now who you can plug into your trade machine calculations, which I know you spend 4 hours a day yourself.
My favorite guy I think that's ever been thrown in, Check Sam. The guy in the random fourth guy in the Allen Iverson Chauncey Billups trade, just thrown in for the extra so they could pay his extra $500,000 or whatever he made. But
yeah, but
I had no idea who he was.
Even he is a prospect to some degree.
Really?
Yeah. He weighs about the same as me, but he's 7'2", so his wingspan is such that I think the Pistons thought so when they drafted him, and you could probably he could still be turned into a player.
So you have looking to make a trade right now. The teams that just need to make a trade to make a trade.
Well, Charlotte. Phoenix. No one's trying harder than Charlotte. No one's trying harder than Toronto. I'd say those two teams are probably at the top of the list. The Suns are certainly weighing their options, but again, you know, just when you get to the point where you say we're ready to blow this thing up, Amari throws up a 22-20.
Blow it up, you're talking about the obvious trade suggested.
What was his suggestion? I don't remember.
Well, I mean, if you're going to look around the league and you're going to look at Amari trades, and you're looking at from Phoenix's standpoint what they would want out of a trade, the big carrot out there is the Rafe LaFrentz contract, because that's a huge contract that matches up. But if he plays 41 straight games without playing, then you can write off 80% of his contract and get the insurance money, which is what made the Theo Ratliff contract so valuable 2 years ago in the Kevin Garnett trade. So if they're going to trade Amari, I think it has to be Portland.
But right? You can't do it. You cannot do it unless you get two players who can play as well. You can't just do it with Rafe being the number one thing you get out of that. Portland has all these good young guys, but I don't get the sense that Outlaw to me seems like the best player that they're willing to part with. I mean,
I don't think it would be for LaFrentz. I mean, obviously, well, let me ask you this. If Portland upgrades from LaMarcus Aldridge to Amari, do they now make the Western Finals?
I just don't see Portland being willing to trade one of their core young guys. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, now if you're the Suns and you could get Aldridge, I mean, yeah, you got to give that serious consideration. But I just don't think Portland is willing to trade any of their top young guys.
And if I was running Portland, that's what I would do. I would say, you know what? We have a ton of cap space in 2010. LeBron, we have an outside shot, I think, at him. I think they do. I think if he wants to win titles, he probably goes there.
Unless he really wants to be close to the Nike campus.
Well, that's a good thing, though, right?
I mean, but I would. Is that enough to get him out of Cleveland? I mean.
Well, I guess the real issue is we don't know what LeBron's ultimate motivations are. Does he want to become the most famous athlete on the planet? Does he want to just win 7 titles in 9 years? Like, what does he want to do? I don't know. We won't probably know until we see how the next 2 years play out with the Cavs.
Well, he's got to win multiple titles to be the global icon. But
right.
Winning a lot of titles in New York, there's something that goes with that. Winning a lot of titles in Cleveland, there's something special about that because that's his hometown and because Cleveland is, you know, got such a cursed sports history. I just don't know that winning a lot of titles in Portland, you know, I don't know how that resonates. I don't know if that does what he's looking for.
Yeah, unless he's the head of the super team, which they could potentially be. Because, nobody, if Odin comes through, that team is frightening. And they have a great coach. He is the best under 45 coach, in my opinion.
No, there's no question.
All the guys.
He is super underrated. No,
yeah,
mean, he's
so
done.
But back to Amari, I don't. If Portland's not there, I don't know who else trades for him. Like, I guess you could say, could you talk Detroit into Rasheed Wallace and Rodney Stuckey for Amari? And Amari comes off in 2010, and they accomplish their objective anyway of being a player that year. I don't know.
See, I just don't know. I don't think the Suns are in a place. Now, a year ago, I think you wrote about it. Now, a year ago when the Suns were right there and before they made the Shaq deal, that trade might have had more, might have been more intriguing to me just because the Suns were close. You know, we saw what Rasheed did with a Detroit team that was close. And with D'Antoni, you need a big who can shoot in D'Antoni's system, you know, as much as anybody's. It's just so valuable. That's why, you know, the Suns had all those fantasies about KG, as amazing as he's been with Boston. You know, you imagining what KG could have done with that Phoenix team, you know, we'll obviously never know. But you know why this, I mean, it's pretty obvious to see why the Suns wanted him.
But he could have been there, too, for him.
Where the Suns are now, does Rasheed really do a lot for them?
I don't know. If I'm a contender, I would love to add Rasheed Wallace. And in fact, ironically, the one place he could never go to is Portland, and that's the trade that makes the most sense. But he could never go back there. But just trading LaFrance's contract for Rasheed is a great basketball trade, in my opinion, and accomplishes a lot. And I think Rasheed needs to leave Detroit anyway. I just think he needs... I agreed with our boy Sam Smith on Monday. Rasheed's playing hard once a week now.
But, I mean, if you're the Suns, this is why the Suns deal. I mean, it's just, you know, Shaq doesn't look real movable at this point.
No.
If you trade Nash, you better brace for a mutiny from your fan base. So, really, Amari is the guy. And, again, just when you get to the point where you think, okay, you can move this guy, he goes and throws up a 22-20 and...
I have one Shaq home for you. I just thought of this. Do the Clips make sense for him?
For what? Camby and what?
No, I would say... you're saying have Shaq and Kamen together?
Well, the Suns aren't going to take anybody back but Camby.
Camby plus... Well, I guess they don't have another contract to throw in. I was just thinking, if I'm the Clippers, at this point, you have to do something to generate some sort of interest. And you pay Shaq, he's on the Clippers again. At least it would make a wave in L.A. I don't know what else they can do. They're going nowhere. Their fans are abandoning them.
They just shouldn't be this bad. They just they have too much talent to be as bad as they are.
I got to say, after watching Baron Davis in person multiple times, that guy's stock is dropping for me a little bit.
I just can't believe he went home to have this happen. I mean, I just imagine it's got to be killing him.
Well, if you go home, you have to get the assurances like, hey, we're going to play the way that worked for me in Golden State, right? Like, you're going to let me do my thing, right? You're giving me 400 plays?
The most amazing thing to me out of that whole thing is it seems like nothing happened until Plaschke wrote that column. It's like all the meetings between... You know, Barron and the coaches and all the discussion about the style stuff. None of that happened until Plaschke wrote the column. It's like, didn't everybody see that there were these issues?
I saw him. I honestly just assumed that they signed him and this was a different direction and they were going to score 120 points every night. And they drafted Eric Gordon. He would be the Monte Ellis and they're going to fire up threes and just play Kamen at center and then go small with everybody else. And that all made sense to me. Then they made the Camby trade and it's like, all right, well, this is interesting. I guess that's a trade you make, but I don't know how every...
Well, I mean, how do you not take Camby for free? They had to do it. And you know what? Zach played so well under D'Antoni in New York that, you know, he proved to be more of an up-tempo guy than I think anybody thought. So, I mean, I think they've got all these pieces, and it's just not...
I know you say, how do they not pass up Camby? And I kind of felt that way, too, when the trade happened. But now that I'm really thinking about it more, and you know, it's like the old thing where you already have a living room sofa, and then your friend says, hey, I got this awesome living room sofa. I'll give it to you for $10. Like, oh, great. Yeah, that sounds good. And then you have two sofas. What do you do?
Yeah, but what they can do with what you love to do. They can trade them. I mean, they got an asset that people want for nothing. I mean, obviously, you know, trading Kamen seems to be what you would like them to do. But, if they decide to keep Kamen, keep Zach, they could move. can be. I mean, now with the, with all the financial trouble they're having, trading the guy with the shortest contract doesn't seem to be the move you'd expect the Clippers to make. But I mean, if they do make Camby available, I mean, they're going to get lots of offers.
I have, really? From who?
No,
name me three teams who would trade for Camby.
Well, the team in the city I live, I know they would for sure.
Yeah, but they have nothing to give up for him, so they're out.
I mean, why wouldn't teams go for Camby, whose contract expires in 2010? And I mean, look at the way he's playing right now.
I agree with you. I'm just saying nobody matches up with them. I've looked through it. I hit the trade machine like a madman.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I, unlike you, have not memorized every salary in the NBA. I can't do it without looking at my book. So.
Hey, that's not my fault. I didn't ask for these powers, Stein. I just don't see where they match up. I mean, could they trade Camby for Rasheed Wallace? Maybe. Do you make that trade? Do you bring Rasheed Wallace to your 4-27 team? Probably not. I don't really know. Like, I mean, do you trade Camby for Boris Diaw? Is that a trade I'm excited about? No. So I don't know really.
Well, I think, you know.
I don't. You know, again, I just think
I'd have to examine it more. All I know is he's a very movable asset, and why wouldn't you take on a movable asset that costs you nothing?
I agree with you, but my point is that I think this particular market, there's 90% sellers and 10% buyers, and the buyers are teams that might not necessarily match up with you. Everybody is looking to not take on extra guys and to keep their expiring contracts. And you know, I don't know how this devolved into a nerdy basketball discussion, but I have to say I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it started with two quick things.
Yeah. And then 40 minutes later, you know, Nowitzki's car's ready and you have to go. I don't know where Camby goes.
Ready. I don't know what the deal is.
Well, mate, you know, if you're Portland, do you trade Prisbilla and Joel and Travis Outlaw for Camby?
Well, since you've memorized contracts, where is Prisbilla right now?
$6 million.
How many years does he have left?
I think he's 3 years, $6 million.
Yeah, because I remember he just signed, not last summer, I think in 2007 he signed.
So maybe.
He's playing really well too. I mean, I think, you know, if he didn't have a contract that goes past 2010, there'd be a lot of teams liking him. But that, I mean, that's the thing. That's the first thing everyone says. What does the contract go past 2010? Oh, not interested.
And Camby stops at 2010, which is a good thing. But
right,
I just think the teams that are likely to trade for him don't want to mess up what they have, and the teams that would be interested in trading for him don't have the right kind of trade. Because if you're the Clippers, why would you get rid of Camby? He's had a good price for 2 years.
I agree with you. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Of the three centers, with the financial trouble the teams have, and you would think he's the guy they want to keep. All I'm saying is, if a team offers you Camby for nothing, and you know at worst you could trade him. I mean, I just you know, second guessing taking him on. I mean, that. I don't see any problem with that. I mean, I think every team in the league was jealous and would have wanted to have Camby for nothing.
Well, I think they should have soaked Denver for number one. I don't understand how Phoenix has to trade two number ones with Kurt Thomas to get rid of him, and then a year later, Denver is somehow able to just unload Marcus Camby for nothing.
Yeah, that was a very nice move by young Mr. Presti.
Now,
Oklahoma City, he told the Suns, we will not do this deal. We'll walk away right now unless we get those two number ones.
And my man Sam Presti. All right, I'm going to let you go. We'll talk to you soon, and good luck with Nowitzki's oil.
Sounds good.
Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So I get to sign off.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.